Hello, and thanks for being with us here on the New Life Show, a series of talks with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Nitzan Mazoz. Hello. Today, we'd like to talk to Dr. Lightman about ourselves, about the people of Israel. Whether we see it or not, turns out that we have very special traits, characteristics that no other nation has. And today we'd like to find out where do they come from and how can they make all of our lives better. Be with us, Nitza, please. Yeah, Israelis really have very special traits. And it's not only something that we see about ourselves, but also people from other nations can point at you and say, you behave like an Israeli. And it's something that really characterizes us. And on our previous shows, we talked about some of these traits. And on this show, we'd like to talk about a trait, a characteristic that's been accompanying us for a long time. That's called a stubborn people. You, the Israelis, you are a stubborn people. And this has many implications. It's especially related to our intellect, to our thoughts, that we have a very strong opinion, that it's very hard to convince us. We have a certain truth, we're following it, we don't look to the right, to the left, this is what I believe, this is what I'll do. Meaning, the concept of a stubborn people may have many implications in our day-to-day life. But what we'd like to understand is, what is this very special quality that was embedded in us since the very start, I think. Yeah. I think that the first time we were called a stubborn people was after the sin of the golden calf. True. So, what is it exactly? All of our qualities, our traits, come from there. From those times where we were together in the days of Abraham, as we became a nation, even though that we're very different, and we're a result of the 70 nations that inhabited Babylon, meaning we're the representatives of the 70 nations of the world. And every time we used to overcome our ego in order to unite, this is what he taught us. And also all of his descendants, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Moses, Aaron, Joseph, David, until the destruction of the Second Temple, we were always working on overcoming. Stubbornly, we worked against our ego in order to be more and more united, connected, without letting go of our connection, because in our connection, we all the time wanted to discover the Creator, the upper force, God, because He is revealed in our connection. The upper force is the general force of nature that encompasses all of nature in this one global integral form that everything that it builds under its individual rule. And therefore, the entire system that it builds, it's all one system that even though that it includes an infinite number of different traits, different parts, but they're all connected between them in a way that all of them are all in all in harmony. And this upper force operates in them, sustains them, and advances their development. We, for about 1,500 years, since the days of Abraham and until the destruction of the Second Temple, we were an attainment of this upper force through building between us this kind of round system. Round meaning that all of Israel are friends. There are no masters and no slaves, servants. Everyone's equal. Everyone is as a friend and a brother to the others, and so on and so forth. And correspondingly, we had these kinds of rules of conduct, of behavior between us, even though that we couldn't always keep them on the necessary level, but in a sense and the sense regarding these principles of all of Israel are friends and love another as thyself, We try to all the time be in a certain form until we really experience the very big disaster called the destruction of the temple, Bet HaMikdash in Hebrew, Bait meaning our connection, and Mikdash meaning holiness, connection, love, mutual bestowal. It broke. And instead of the force of bestowal that dwelled among us, what took over was the force of reception, the egoistic force, where everyone now, since that point and on, since the destruction of the temple and on for 2,000 years already, everyone's in a state where he doesn't care about others. The main thing is automatically, instinctively, a person all the time thinks about how do I save myself from any bad that might happen. The others, maybe if I depend on them, then yes, but if I don't, I don't care. I can't take them into account. This is actually what happened to us. And therefore, since then, the state that we're in is called exile. Exile, meaning that we can't think about each other. This is called exile. Exile from holiness, from sanctity, because sanctity means bestowal and love. Exile meaning that we can't feel our connection, our brotherly love, like you said. This is exile? Yes. Okay, so going back to the characteristic of a stubborn nation, how do you define it? And what is it exactly? Is it positive or is it negative? A stubborn nation, it means that first and foremost, that if back then, in the times of holiness, sanctity, love, and mutual bestowal that dwelled among the people of Israel, if back then I all the time resisted my ego that sometimes erupted here and there, and I was constantly against it, and I used to say about my ego that it is stubborn. The ego is stubborn. The ego is stubborn, yes. And all the time I fought against it. In Hebrew, a stubborn nation means amkshe orif, which literally means stiff-necked. And Pharaoh also means neck, orif, our entire ego. So after we fell from our spiritual degree, and instead of the desire to bestow upon others that everyone were as my brothers, I started thinking only about myself. Then the power that I had to work against my ego and to bestow onto others, it turned upside down now, and I want to think only about myself. And even if I trick others, I con and cheat others, I don't mind. And to the contrary, maybe I even enjoy it. And so the stiff neck is becoming revealed now, not allowing me to think in the other direction at all. And we see it on the people. No matter how much you talk to them, look, we are the people of Israel, we have to unite, we have to connect. No, neither the secular nor the religious, no one can turn to the other. We build different systems, charities, and so on, but it's not a heartly participation. Orif, the back of the neck, does it have to do with stubbornness? It is the stubbornness of my ego that I won't be able to cope with it. Again, please. It's the stubbornness of my ego, the insolence of my ego that I can't cope with. So, just to see if I get it, you're saying that in the past, when the general atmosphere was that we have to try and work, each against his egoistic force, trying to build a connection of love and bestowal between us, then the expression of the stubbornness was that a person discerned that in him there's this inner force that pulls him to take from others to himself all the time, and he overcame that. Yeah. And then he determined his egoistic inclination as that stubbornness that causes him to take everything from everyone for himself instead of working in love. Yeah. So everyone was working against their inner egoistic force. Yeah. Then there was the destruction and our ties broke. Yeah. So what does being a stubborn nation mean now? The power with which I stood against my ego in favor of connecting everyone as one man and one heart, now it's the very opposite. The entire force that used to work for holiness, connection, love, it's the opposite now. It's working to the detriment. I don't want to do anything good for others. I'm deaf. I can't think about others. Even if I'm told, I can't hear. It doesn't penetrate my ear. When I'm told about it, it's like you tell your children, "You're brothers. Why can't you get along?" They do what they want. That's the thing. Okay, another trait. Maybe it's related, maybe it's not. Israelis, they have a very strong opinion about things. They have a strong opinion about everything. And try and convince someone. It's a lost cause. And you can see it in any relationship, between spouses, between parents and children, at work, on the road, in politics. But at work, suppose, today the biggest challenge in workplaces and organizations is how to motivate the workers to do what the boss wants. Meaning there's a boss. He pays me. He says that this is what you have to do. And I, as an employee, I have an opinion about it. Everyone rules the world. Furthermore, we made such rules at our workplaces that they tie our hands. Yeah, but it was just an example. What I wanted to say is that everyone has an opinion. Anyone can be the prime minister, the minister of defense, the national coach. You have a question, he knows the answer. Where does this come from? That everyone has a very strong opinion and that I can't accept anyone else's opinion. Where does it come from and what does it exist for? That it exists in us, this is something very special. This is a very big asset because each of us needs to be conspicuous in something that has to do with the root of his soul. He has to express the root of his soul. He has to open it. He has to be the greatest of all toward the general soul of Israel, because we, among us, are tied together to a single system. And in this single system, everyone has a special role. And then a person feels that due to his inner spiritual role that exists in him, even though that he didn't realize it yet and he doesn't know what is it about at all, but he feels that he's unique, that he's special, and therefore, don't tell me what to do. I know what to do. I have an opinion, and I'm smarter than you are. And go and teach someone else, but not me. Because, really, in truth, he has an inner point of the soul from which he is the highest toward everyone. But highest in terms of having to bestow to everyone. What does to bestow mean? To convey the upper light through him to all the other souls. But because we turned upside down and we fell from a high mountain into a deep abyss, then this entire quality of uniqueness in everyone works to the contrary. What can you do? This is very interesting because actually everyone's really right. Everyone sees it from their own unique perspective. They'll be right if they will acquire the quality of bestowal and add it to their uniqueness. meaning that actually everyone will be right the moment they will be correctly connected between them, right? And then everyone will truly express their uniqueness, and it will be for everyone's benefit. At the moment, it's the very opposite. Everyone has his own opinion, his own direction. You can't convince them. You can't connect with them. You can't find the common denominator. This is actually the gap. Yeah. Another characteristic I'd like to ask about, what is it, where does it come from, and what does it exist for, is that we, the Israelis, we like to be straightforward. Don't beat around the bush. Be straightforward. Speak up. What do you want? What's that? It's that in the past, we used to reach the truth. The essence of creation, the purpose of creation, the meaning of life, the purpose of life, a deep inner understanding, the deepest inner understanding of all of the laws of nature, entirely. Where all of nature, in all the worlds, and the entire reality that we see and the one that we don't see, in the past, we used to feel and understand it. And then, what does it have to do with being straightforward? Because in us, there is this straightforward demand that this is something that we do want, but to pay for it by conceding our ego, this we don't want. Why do Israelis demand of each other to be straightforward without beating around the bush? Because we are a people that are drawn to the truth, that are drawn to the sum total, that are drawn to something that I immediately see, I immediately identify, understand, and realize. This is what we had. And again, in our current state, it works to the contrary. Another characteristic that I'd like to understand is the matter of the warmth and the familiarity, intimacy. I'm sure that this is something that doesn't exist in other countries, in other nations. You can meet a person that you never met before, you have nothing in common, and suddenly reach such an interaction that will have such warmth that you can't imagine. I remember that many years ago, I came back from a long time in the Far East. I'm on a plane from India to Israel. Next to me, there was a couple. I don't know who they are, where they're from. I don't even remember how, even without many words. I felt that during the flight, we created such an interaction between us that I felt that they're the closest people in the world. Really, I can't explain it. Without many words, where does that come from? And it can happen at any given moment. Sometimes it happens in the army. Sometimes when you have some kind of a problem, you're in the hospital. You can't even explain where or how, but there is this kind of potential of warmth that exists between two Israelis, which is like a volcano. I don't even know how to explain it. That sometimes when it comes, you feel like, whoa, what is that? It's because in the past, we used to be connected in a single system. It's something that doesn't exist in any other nation or anywhere else, but only among those that were connected in the past as one man and one heart. And it means that we were connected at the state of Mount Sinai. It's not something corporeal. It's spiritual, that we're connected in a single desire. And therefore, if some of that feeling can appear now, then it really grabs people, brings them together, and they feel that they're a part of the same nation, of the same mother. Other nations don't have this closeness. And again, it's all because of the spiritual history that we went through in the past. There are many other traits that characterize Israelis, but there is something that is like a cloud that's hovering over all of us, over everything that we did, everything that we developed in the past 70 years in Israel. Still, there is something called existential fear that really characterizes Israelis. Of course, everyone feels it. And it's something that, despite all of our achievements, everything, our innovations, Nothing can dissipate this existential fear. So where does it come from? If for our animate bodily existence we need such and such food supplies and water and something, army, strong army that can cope with all the other armies around us at our borders. Suppose we have everything and we're 100% sure that we are covered from any evil, from anything. Still, we feel anxiety for our existence because our existence includes a spiritual degree. What do you mean? It means that we have to achieve something that's higher than the animate life, where we're simply concerned with our body, with our offsprings. It's not enough. Because in the past, we developed spiritually. So these reshimot, these spiritual genes, they exist in us and they demand their realization. And therefore, to the extent to which we will not realize them, nothing will help. So we won't be able to feel safe. No. And it doesn't matter how insolent and stubborn we'll be, even if the entire world will sign such agreements with us that we'll be like brothers with everyone. We still remain with such reshimot, spiritual genes, inner demands for a spiritual degree. And we will feel forced, coerced, we'll feel anxious, we'll feel that our desire isn't realized, that it's empty, and we'll really feel like a small rabbit shivering under a bush. This is how we'll feel. The truth is that it exactly describes the feeling, and we also see what the implications of this phenomenon are. For example, we see that we make sure that we have a second nationality, another passport in our pocket, to always leave a way out. We're not sure of what's going to happen here tomorrow. It's hard for us to make long-term plans. A person has 1,000 different plans going through his head, and they won't help at all, because here there is an irrational concern, spiritual one. Won't a strong army help our anxiety? Not at all. Never. It only helps on condition that we're still somehow on hold. Are we going to realize our destiny or not? The moment that it'll become clear to everyone that we're not about to keep our destiny, to be as one man and one heart, to connect among us, to show the rest of the world the method of connection, to be light onto the nations. If we don't do it in the time that we have to do it, then neither the army nor anything else will help us. We'll fall apart. All the countries in the world will leave us. They'll reach a state where they decide to revoke the state of Israel, being the source of concern and the problem of all nations. And no nation will be in our favor, but everyone will be against us, and we will not be able to do anything against it. What they will allow us to do is that they'll give us an okay. You can leave this country within a matter of a few months, suppose. Where? Uganda, or there are such countries that will take you in with your dollars. That's it. How is it possible to solve our existential fear once and for all, our feeling of transience, that anything can change in any given moment? I see just one solution, which is to realize ourselves. What we have to do, to be light onto the nations. We have the method of connection. Love another as thyself. We have to realize it and to show the rest of the world how to do it. That's it. There's no way out of this. We can't escape it. We can't escape our destiny, this goal, and we have to realize it. Otherwise, I think that it's going to end much quicker than we think. It seems that these values, these positive values of connection and love among people that you're talking about, when you talk about them and I hear them as an Israeli, I have two responses inside of me. On the one hand, I say, right, this is who we really are. This is our soul, the soul of Israel. On the other hand, there's this response that tells me, is he delusional? Is he from Israel or is he from another planet? This is the most disputed place in the world. Everyone thinks that he's right. How do I live with these two inner responses? Live with it however you want, but you should know that if this is how you keep going, then your life here, your days here, are counted. Are you threatening me? No. What then? I'm recommending you to think. And don't start with, I'm not a sucker, you can't trick me, and so on. No, because you evoke responses in me that resist what you're saying. To me, it doesn't matter. What does matter to you? What matters to me is that if you want to hear, then listen. And if you don't, what can I do? Our time's almost up. What should we leave this show with? Love another as thyself. That's it. This is the rule that you must keep and bring the entire world under this rule. Amen. Amen. Thank you very much, Dr. Lightman. Thank you, Nitza. Thank you for being with us. Till next time, all the best.